I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today I'm speaking with State Senator Heather Summers, who has served a key role on the state's vaccine advisory group. Senator Summers, welcome. Can you tell me what is the latest in terms of Connecticut's vaccine rate, and what is the future for this advisory committee that has done so much work?
Sure, absolutely. Well, Connecticut still continues to be one of the leaders in the country as far as getting people vaccinated. We have, as of last Thursday, I don't have the latest information, we had administered nearly 3 million doses of the vaccine. We have almost 1.2 million series completed, meaning people have had their first and their second shot. And we continue to offer clinics. Now we are in a position where we are encouraging more and more to folks to get vaccinated. We tend to have more vaccine than people ready to take the vaccine at this point. So we continue to host forums when it is requested to provide the correct and factual information concerning the vaccine. And I myself just received my second dose on the 17th of April. I waited until my age category to be eligible. And the first dose was a breeze. The second dose was kind of tricky. You know, I was achy in places that I didn't know could ache. But within 24 hours, you know, I was back to myself. So everyone I talk to, I've encouraged them to get the vaccine to help protect themselves and others. And we are in the midst now of continuing to push in the areas that tend to be hesitant towards vaccines to make sure that people have the accurate information so they can make their decision on whether to get the vaccine or not.
Okay, and we can't help but ask, did you have the Pfizer or the Moderna?
I had Moderna. My husband had Pfizer, so we spread the wealth. And yes, it was not such a pleasant experience, but from what we've learned, that's your body's immune response. So I was prepared. I knew that I would probably not feel so great. So I got in on a Saturday. So Sunday was kind of a downer day, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, glad you're feeling better. And your specific role on this advisory group had to do with public relations, yes?
Yes, we were... I was in charge. I was one of the co-chairs of the sub-communication group. And we were really tasked in the beginning to come up with a plan, almost, I would say, a marketing plan on how we should communicate the message to the state, to individuals, to healthcare providers, sort of a, you know, an outline on what we thought the best communication methods would be and how we would do that. And then from there, we sort of morphed our mission into being a grassroots organization to spread correct information. And we spent a lot of time working on forums with a member from the Scientific Review Board and other local clinicians that would host forums where we would either have a certain demographic that wanted to learn about the vaccine. We did some churches in Hartford in dual languages to spread the correct information. There was a lot of false information that was out there that needed to be corrected for the record, again, so that individuals had an opportunity to make their informed decision as to whether they wanted to obtain the vaccine or not. And it was an interesting experience because at the beginning, we didn't know as much as we did as we moved further on. For example, when we first started, it wasn't quite clear if you had had COVID and you recovered, how long did you have to wait until you got the vaccine? So those are things that we learned during the process. Or, you know, if you were someone who was treated for COVID in the hospital and had convalescent plasma, which is plasma that had come from someone who had recovered from COVID, how long would you wait to get your vaccine? Should you get vaccinated? So we learned a lot as we went through the process. Also, we learned a little bit more about the transmission of the virus, et cetera. So it was teaching individuals the information that we were learning sort of in a real-time basis. So quite an interesting experience.
And is the advisory group now still active and playing an important role as the state starts to encourage those who are really hesitant to go out and get the vaccine?
That's a really good question. You know, our group has, in some respects, the governor has another overlay of communications. Some of our members have worked on their communication network that they have, and the governor's group is really doing that more now. We have sort of morphed into meeting less often, to communicating as necessary, but we are sort of in reserve should we need to be called back up again, according to the DPH commissioner.
And did you ever anticipate that this, you've worn many, many hats, particularly in public health, that this would be the role that you would assume now is urging people who really don't want to get a vaccine?
Well, I think it's important to remember that we are in a pandemic, and that encouraging people to get a vaccine, I think one of the hardest things about this committee was who was going to have access to the vaccine and who was not. And that was done by the allocation committee, but the communication of that was left to our committee, which was really difficult because it was changing all the time. You know, ultimately, I do believe that the governor and the DPH commissioner made the right decision. I was always somebody who thought it should be age-based. I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but when you looked at how this virus was affecting people, there was no more clear evidence than those that were 65 and above accounted for close to 89% of the deaths. And when you lowered that to 55 and above, it was like 99% of the deaths were in that age group. So those were the people that were clearly the most vulnerable. And the easiest way and the most effective way to sort of allocate a limited number of vaccines based on the number that are impacted is by age, because it takes everything else out. It takes race, it takes demographic, it takes, you know, accessibility just out of the equation. And, you know, we did struggle many times with having people sort of skirt the system and you know, say I'm a healthcare provider, even though they may not have been, and you know, you're not required to ask for proof. You know, there was one time when I did get a call from a clinician who was really irate because she had had patients that were in the age category that were eligible for the vaccine and they were having a difficult time getting it. And then she was at a CVS and saw young people with New York license plates getting vaccinated. So, you know, of course, I reported that directly to the person in charge of the vaccine sort of allocation process. And then I talked to the CVS lobbyist who said, absolutely, it's not happening. And then a few hours later, it's like, uh-oh, it might have been happening. So there was a lot of that. And so the easiest way to do that, quite frankly, is just do it by age. And in this particular case, it really was appropriate because those were the people that were being impacted the most. So that was a difficult thing to communicate because there had already been sort of this expectation that there was going to be this 1B rollout with, you know, people with one comorbidity and teachers and restaurant workers. But when you started to talk in these groups saying, how are you going to prove that? I mean, is everyone going to go to their doctor and try to get a slip that says and the doctors are like, we're overwhelmed. You know, people can't come to us anyway because there's COVID. How are we going to manage this? So I think the governor did a really smart move and made a good decision to do it the way he has done it. And he has been, you know, obviously when we compare ourselves to other states, amazing, really amazing. I remember at Easter, I was talking to one of my friends in Germany and they were just on the 80 and above in Germany. And here we are, we were at, I think 55 and above, maybe at that point, maybe 45. I don't remember when that actually dropped down, but they were saying it's amazing how well the United States has done, especially Connecticut, in administering these vaccines. And that will help us be able to open things up and get our economy up and going a little bit quicker than we have been for the last year. So I didn't imagine I would be doing this. But obviously, if you were asked to do it, you know, I wanted to try to rise to the occasion and do the best job that we can. I spent many, many evenings on Zoom calls and Zoom forums about the vaccine. And I can't thank enough the local clinicians or some throughout the state that were willing to volunteer their time, even after a really long day and seeing COVID patients, being really willing to communicate to individuals the importance and answer their questions honestly. Sometimes they were honest and say, you know what, we don't have that information, but here's what we do know. And so once people are informed and they have, you know, all the information or their questions answered, I think it's up to them to make their decision as to whether they would like to be vaccinated. I always say I will get vaccinated when I'm ready. I would encourage you to, but ultimately it has to be the individual's decision whether they are willing to be vaccinated.
So in addition to the sort of curveball that the governor threw in terms of changing the order to make it by age, there was also the recent issue with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Did you have a lot to do with communicating on that issue, and did you receive a lot of panic phone calls from constituents and others saying, oh my God, I got that vaccine, or, you know, how did that work?
We did get quite a few calls on it. You know, that is also, you know, these vaccines are, you know, they have not gone through the full approval long-term studies. They've gotten EUA approval, which is emergency use. And the J&J one is difficult. It's one of the things that's so difficult is that you can't, you know, initially you hear about what happens and you, of course, don't know if that person that had this adverse reaction had something else going on at first and it just happened to coincide with the vaccine, or you just don't know at first. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, not to make it light in any shape or form, but if you read the product insert for birth control pills, there's a higher rate of stroke there or smoking than there is with the J&J vaccine. You know, that being said, all these things are being closely monitored. I will have to say that Connecticut's Scientific Review Committee did an amazing job. I don't think there has been any vaccine that has been more closely monitored than this COVID vaccine. And also I think it was important to have these forums to make sure that individuals understood the difference between an adverse event and sort of a reaction versus a symptom that you may have that would be normal after a vaccine. You know, running a fever was not an adverse reaction. That's something that would typically be seen in a vaccine. So getting that out to the public is really important. You know, and obviously our scientific review committee, I called them immediately when I heard about the J&J situation, and they were pretty confident in all the data that they had reviewed. Our scientific review committee, which is made up of, you know, brilliant clinicians and others that serve on that, some are still practicing, some others are retired, and they reviewed all of the safety and efficacy data that went to the FDA. So we almost had our little mini FDA within Connecticut. And we felt comfortable that they could review the data and come to the same conclusion. And they all felt very confident in the data that they had seen from J&J. They did not seem to be panicked in any way. And we do know that, you know, the FDA has just cleared them again to be able to use the vaccine.
Regarding the vaccine hesitancy and the, you know, sort of there was a lot of discussion about equity and so on. It seems that now we have vaccine and we need people to come and get it. Yes. Is there any particular pitch that you could give to people who are hesitant? And when people tell you they're not getting it, I've heard you respond. Could you kind of let me know how you do respond to that?
I think one of the best ways to encourage individuals is to be able to say that you yourself received the vaccine. You can talk honestly about, you know, what the experience was like, and also that they have all the correct information. I mean, we've heard things from it alters your DNA, on some of these vaccines, which is just not true. You know, it's made with certain cells that it's not made with. You know, this technology can't be produced so quickly when really the platform for these mRNA viruses has been around for a very long time. That's why this vaccine was able to come to market so quickly. So what we try to do really is to encourage people to get the vaccine through education, going in to the community with people that are trusted within the community to help create that message. Sometimes people don't want to hear from this panel of doctors, but they're willing to listen to their pastor, or, you know, they're willing to listen to their community healthcare worker who has the information. Also, people that have had the vaccine that are good ambassadors for what it's like. Those who have suffered through COVID are wonderful ambassadors. We had one clinician who had COVID, recovered, and then got the vaccine and talked about what it was like to have COVID. And some of the folks who have had the vaccine, who have had, you know, a rough second shot, shows their immune system is really kicking things into gear there, so to speak, but also gives you a recognition of, geez, if you felt lousy for one day from getting the second dose, can you imagine what it was like to have COVID or have to go through COVID? Some people obviously had an extremely difficult time and recovered. Others were not nearly so lucky. So I think all of those things together with an educational push is the best way to get people to be willing to take this vaccine. I think also some folks, even if they have had COVID and recovered, yes, they may have some antibodies and some immunity, but with the new variants that are out that are in some cases supposedly successful against the vaccine, with the against the vaccine, there's others that the vaccine works really well with, so, and is effective against. So therefore having the vaccine would cover you for those variants. And I think also so many people that have been touched with a loss during this process are great advocates and great ambassadors to the vaccine. All I would have to say right now is look at what's happening in India. For anybody to be hesitant on taking a vaccine, look what's happening there. Our biggest issue is we're not sure how long the immunity will last. And the one nice thing about this mRNA platform is, you know, we may be vaccinated now. If a new variant becomes very prevalent that for some reason these vaccines do not work against, you almost have like the menu and you can just plug in a different appetizer. So they're quick to come to be able to be used safely. So I do believe the best way to encourage folks is through education and discussion. I don't think, you know, the idea of forcing somebody is going to make them want to take the vaccine. And the more we can do to communicate the proper information, I think the better off we are through encouragement and, you know, sort of persistent insistence without mandating. I think that's the best way to get more people to take the vaccine. I can tell you, I've had many, many people, even now, that are homebound, you know, being very sort of, you know, selfless in the fact that they're saying, look, you know, I may be in my 80s, but I don't go anywhere. So I want people that are more out and about that maybe have more of a chance to get it, to be able to get it. And we're saying to them now call us and tell us who you are, because we'll come to you. We want to make sure that you also are vaccinated and that you also, you know, have the ability to be vaccinated like so many others have at this point.
So I think it's a fine line. At one point, I saw one of the lawmakers suggesting that we go door to door with the vaccine. And I said, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like a good idea. You know,
the homebound folks, they didn't really have, you know, they're not really going out and about. And they wanted, because we were limited, they're saying, well, let's let people that have to be out get it. But they're home now. And we have enough vaccines. So if you let us know, we can figure out a way to either get you to the vaccine or get someone to you to give it to you should you want. I think those are important conversations to have.
You know, the public might think there's like these thousands and thousands of doses of vaccine that are going to go to waste. Is that true?
No, we heard that repeatedly too. Like, oh, you know, we know that you're wasting all these vaccine. Well, I can tell you the only one that I know of a wasted vaccine was when a clinician mistakenly knocked it over. These were treated like, you know, your baby. These came in, I think they were in cases of five. And sometimes you would have people wait till the next day because you didn't want to open them up and have four possibly not go to use. We also started, and everybody did this as we got going. Many of the hospitals and our local health districts had this wait list. So if for some reason somebody didn't show up for their appointment, they would have a list of somebody to use that vaccine for. We really received the directive that I don't care whose arm it's going in at that point, but you're not going to waste any vaccine. It's going in someone's arm. So make sure there's someone available. I would say we had very little waste. They tracked that like nothing I've ever seen before. So there was times when literally the legislature or other health districts would say, I'm sorry, you come back tomorrow because I'm not going to open up this pack of five and then have four if I don't have people on the wait list. That's how we were able to help some folks who didn't fit the criteria for the age bracket or being a healthcare clinician to be able to get vaccinated, who had, you know, significant comorbidities or were a very disabled child. That's how we were able to get them. We'd say, get a list, and if there's an availability, they will help you. And so that was, you know, not a way to skirt the system because we weren't trying to do that. We were trying to make sure nothing got wasted, but also, you know, make sure those who were very fragile were able to try to obtain it if there was an ability to do that. That's how my husband, who's a clinician, got his on a wait list. So that's how it worked. But Connecticut did a good job at sort of allocating that. And I want to say so strongly that I could not thank our local health districts for the incredible job that they have done during this pandemic. You know, they are the folks that are trained in pandemics, but without them, I don't know what we could have done. And there are hundreds of volunteers. I was talking to one, we're so blessed in our area. We have this amazing health district. And I was talking to the folks when I got my vaccine. And they talked about how they have so many clinicians, doctors, and nurses willing to volunteer their time that they actually like get disappointed if they have enough people, you know, for that particular clinic, where other parts of the state they're not so lucky. But without all those volunteers, you know, whether you were a clinician or just a regular citizen helping to check people in, without your help, we would not be here where we are. And our health districts just did an amazing job. They are such an integral part of this whole process. And I'm hoping that they will be able to get a little bit of an increase in their funding because their funding is the same funding as it's been since 1997. So that has been a huge plug in appropriations saying.
We heard that from Steve Mansfield when he was on the podcast a little earlier this year. I very much appreciate all the information that you bring every time we talk to you, Senator Summers. And
absolutely. Thanks for having me. And I hope everybody gets their COVID shot. And if you have any questions, you can always reach out and we can put you in touch with the people that can answer it, the experts.
Great. Take care and have a great day.
Thank you.
This is Managing Editor Isaskun Larrañeta. And I want to thank you for listening to today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Now, here's the deal. What we do is not free. When you subscribe to The Day, you are supporting local journalists who care about the community just as much as you do. They work tirelessly to uncover what's going on in the city or town you live in. They cover moments of joy and sadness. And during these crazy, historic times, we need your support to continue to cover the stories that you care about. please consider a subscription to The Day by visiting theday.com/subscribe. Thank you.